After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material nature with his internal potency, material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Hiranmaya. This takes place in material nature when she is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls. Purport: the impregnation of material nature is described in Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, verse 3. Material nature's primal factor is the Mahat-tattva, or breeding source of all varieties. This part of material nature, which is called Pradhan as well as Brahman, is impregnated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and delivers varieties of living entities. Material nature in this connection is called Brahman because it is a perverted reflection of the spiritual nature. It is described in the Vishnu Purana that the living entities belong to the spiritual nature. The potency of the Supreme Lord is spiritual, and the living entities, although they are called marginal potency, are also spiritual. If the living entities were not spiritual, this description of impregnation by the Supreme Lord would not be applicable. The Supreme Lord does not put his semen into that which is not spiritual, but it is stated here that the Supreme Person puts his semen into material nature. This means that the living entities are spiritual by nature. After impregnation, material nature delivers all kinds of living entities, beginning from the greatest living creature, Lord Brahma, down to the insignificant ant, in all varieties of form. In Bhagavad Gita, material nature is clearly mentioned as Sarva Yonishu. This means that of all varieties of species, demigods, human beings, animals, birds and beasts, whatever is manifested, material nature is the mother, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the seed-giving father. Generally, it is experienced that the father gives life to the child, but the mother gives its body. Although the seed of life is given by the father, the body develops within the womb of the mother. Similarly, the spiritual living entities are impregnated into the womb of material nature, but the body being supplied by material nature takes on many different species and forms of life. The theory that the symptoms of life are manifest by the interaction of the 24 material elements is not supported here. The living force comes directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is completely spiritual. Therefore, no material scientific advancement can produce life. The living force comes from the spiritual world and has nothing to do with the interaction of the material elements. Srila Prabhupada points out at the end of this purport that the theory that the symptoms of life are manifest by the interaction of the 24 material elements is not supported here. So, Sankhya Yoga, the description of the material world and how everything within it interacts, has gone on up to this point. But now there's divarication from the Sankhya philosophy of the atheist Kapila, who studies all the material nature and comes to the conclusion that it's working automatically. It's going on by itself. By chance, the modern scientists may say. Although if you think about it, to say something is happening by chance, it's not very scientific. If you're trying to show how complex extraordinarily complex interactions, they're so complex that the biggest brains in the world, they're accumulating what they consider to be knowledge over generations, and they still can't work out what's going on, but they can understand it's very complex. So the Personality of Godhead, Kapila Deva, is explaining here what actually appeals to the intelligence of someone who is not partial. If we impartially consider, then the idea, the concept that there is a supreme intelligence who puts everything together and holds everything together, it appeals to the intelligence much more than the idea that everything's simply going on without any control, any reason, any design. It's actually more scientific. If we take science to mean an impartial study, but of course, atheistic scientists are not impartial, so they're very much biased towards the idea that there is no God in control. Asatyam apratishtam te jagad ahur anishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. So this atheistic theory is being nirasa, niraskar, it's being rejected or defeated by Lord Kapiladev. He's addressing certain misconceptions, common misconceptions. That's there in Bhagavad Gita also. Srila Prabhupada points out in the purports, and previous acharyas point out in their purports to Bhagavad Gita how by making certain statements, Lord Krishna is directly addressing common misconceptions that Arjuna or others may have, that there is homogeneity of souls, that there's only one soul, that there is no soul, no atma, anatmavadi. There's another variety of philosopher, that there is no spiritual, there is no spiritual nature. These Sankhya, Nirishva Sankhya philosophers, they're another kind of anatmavadi. Or even if they superficially accept there's some kind of spirit, they say spirit is a product of matter, which again, it negates the very definition of atma. Atma means that which is prakritim vidhime param. It's a para prakriti. It is that prakriti which is beyond bhumirapa nalovayo kangmano buddhirevacha and the hunka. So this is being addressed in some detail by Lord Kapiladev. Now the exact mechanics of it is pretty difficult to understand. What's being discussed here about material nature delivering here in terms of giving birth. Sa Suta, she Suta gave birth, just like we have the word prasuti. The other day in the Rathiatra in Surat, I needed to pass water, so I saw something looked like a hospital. I went inside and I came out, so it was all women there. I came out and said, Prasuti Griha. Oh, I shouldn't have gone in there. It's the wrong place for me. So, giving birth, it's the material nature gives birth, being impregnated with the internal potency. That means the internal potency means the jivas. Now, it's stated that the Supreme Lord impregnated with his virya, with his potency, and material nature delivered, gave birth to the Hiranmayam Mahatattva. From Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purpose, which I believe are based on, well, that's based on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's purpose, which is based on Jiva Goswami's purpose, that this function of impregnating the material nature with the jivas is actually done by Lord Shiva. And that's mentioned that Aham Bija Pradapita, when the seed-giving father mentioned in the, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the seed-giving father of all living beings, this actually refers to Lord Shiva, because Bhagawan Vishnu himself doesn't have direct contact with the material energy, but he does so through his agency, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is worshipped as Linga, in Linga form. That is his function. Of course, his sexual activities, they're not to be compared with those of lusty materialists like ourselves. That is a function on the border between spiritual existence and material existence. Lord Shiva's whole existence is very difficult to understand. Shiv Tattva is very difficult to understand, isn't it? How many times we get questions about Shiv Tattva? Because he is Bhagavan. He's known as Parameshwar, Mahadev, Bhagavan, Ishvara. All these terms apply to him. And he is non-different from Bhagavan Vishnu. But at the same time, there is intrinsic difference. So he's both. Just like Guru Tattva is also very difficult to understand. Because from one perspective, he's to be considered as God. But then on the other hand, he's not. He's Sevak Bhagavan, whereas the person he directs us to is Savior Bhagavan. So Lord Shiva, he performs the function of impregnating material nature, who is his wife. She is. It's again, these things are very difficult to understand with our empiric scientific training. This scientific training, it actually makes it more difficult to understand reality, to get the modern kind of scientific training. But in Vedic understanding, when we say Vedic understanding, it doesn't mean something that you can choose. You can choose Vedic understanding or Buddhist understanding or Christian understanding or scientific understanding or Deepak Chopra's own understanding, which is potpourri of everything, put together with a little Chopra spice. So it's not just another opinion, but rather those who are followers of the Vedas understand and accept that that's the condition to take up understanding Vedic knowledge, that Veda means that which is real. It gives actual knowledge. Of course, there are so many different schools of Vedic understanding who interpret the Vedas in different ways. But that's why it's necessary to, according to the Vedic system, find that tattva darshi, one who can illuminate the truth because he has seen the truth. As Prabhupada translates that famous tadvidhi pranipatena verse, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So others may be describing the Vedic knowledge according to Andha Gajanyai, a well-known example of the blind men describing the elephant. They all have a partial understanding. One grabs the tail, one grabs the ear, one grabs the tusk, another grabs the leg, and they all give different opinions of what an elephant is, which in all of them have got some of the truth. Just like this Sankhya philosophy of Kapiladev, there's a lot of in it that's true. Even the Mayavad philosophy, there's a lot in it that's true. Prabhupada said that up to the point of liberation, the Mayavad philosophy and Vaishnava philosophy is the same. Both Vaishnavas and Mayavadis, they accept that knowledge is to be taken from the Vedas, and the culture is all the same, that we have to respect Guru, Govinda, Ganga, Gavi, all these, the same culture. They also read Mahabharata and Ramayana and all these things. So it's the same culture. I mean, it's agreed by the Mayavadis and Vaishnavas. They are both subscribed to Vedanta Darshan, which Vedanta is describing Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now we should inquire into the absolute truth. They're not Mimamsakas. They don't believe Karma Mimamsa. They don't believe that the Vedas teach us to enjoy this material world. They agree that this material world is miserable and that we are soul, we are Atma, and we don't belong here. We have to be liberated. It's all the same up to this point. But then what is the nature of liberation? There's such a big difference that we are opposed to the Mayavadis, strongly opposed. So there are so many different interpretations of Vedic knowledge. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is very dear to the Vaishnavs because it is the spotless Purana. There is no trace of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha here. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted it as Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. It is the topmost authority. Even then, sometimes the Mayavadis, as Prabhupada says, unnecessarily poke their noses into the matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. They have no business here. But they unnecessarily malinterpret. Ahameva sameva agre nanyad yadasat param. They malinterpret. Aham here means the oneness of all souls, their imagined oneness of all souls. So here, Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev, is describing the fundamental principles of material nature. He's described all the different elements, and now he's describing how it all comes together and comes to be. And although I must admit, you should probably get Tamal Krishna, he was speaking the other day in a much more knowledgeable way than I was. He studied all these things about how all the different elements interact and this and that. But it's like an engineering course. If you study engineering, then you can understand when you look at a bridge. You can see there are different kinds of bridges. There are suspension bridges and what else? Now I'm stuck. I got as far as one. And there's ones supported on pillars, and there's bridges which are supported on ropes, and then there's floating bridges and all kinds of different bridges. So an engineer can understand how all this is put together. What is the physics behind it? What are the dynamics behind it? Because he's trained. He's taken the trouble to be trained. So this section of the Bhagavatam is a section on cosmic engineering. There are different kinds of engineers. Civil engineers, computer engineers, electrical engineers. So this is cosmic engineering. Even before Lord Brahma, he's known as the engineer of the universe. He's called the creator. He's actually an engineer. He takes the raw elements and organizes it all. But here it's being described how the Lord has invested his potency into material nature, and therefore it all comes about. And the important point here, apart from all the details of engineering, is that it is by the desire. Daivat means from the destiny, is the English word used, although it's not really, destiny doesn't really describe, actually the word daiva, this is a better word, because it shows the influence of the Supreme Lord, deva. Deva means Bhagavan, means God. That word this is talking about the sum total of living beings, how according to their desires, they are impregnated into material nature, the desire to enjoy this material world. And this is at the total level, prior to the creation of the material world, and at the individual level, karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papati. At the cosmic level, that's at the super cosmic level, there's Karnadakshai Vishnu. At the cosmic level, in each universe, there's Garbhodakshai Vishnu. And within each universe, and overseeing each individual jiva, at the microcosmic level, Ikshirodakshai Vishnu. So Vishnu's Tutrini Rupani, the Vishnu takes three forms and oversees the universe, the material universe at different levels. Karmana Daiva Netrena, Daiva, under the watchful eyes of the Supreme Lord, who Prabhupada has quoted in the previous purport, this Upadrashta Numanta Cha, he's watching, he's seeing, Upadrashta, he's seeing. Upadrashta gives the idea that he's in this sense a secondary seeing. That the jiva, he is taking the initiative and then the Lord allows, Anumanta. You want to do? Okay. You want to do? You want to go to hell? Okay. That he also gives. He may even give some inspiration. Someone wants to go to hell. Oh, here's an opportunity. There's someone you can rob and kill. He gives the intelligence. How? Sarvasya chaham hriddi sannivishto matasmati agyanam apohanam cha. He gives knowledge. That even means the knowledge how to act in a way that is against our own self-interest. So, daiva, destiny, because of the conditioned soul's desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, therefore this vast arrangement of this mature world is there. This is the reason why we are in this material world. That question, the philosopher's question, why? Philosophers like to ask this question. That's a good question. Why? Why is everything going on? Why is there suffering? Why is there so cruel in this world? Someone's just going along in the train, in the local train, sitting in his seat, snoozing, he's tired after a hard day's work, and all of a sudden, blown to pieces. What did he do to deserve? Why? So here the answer is given. Daivat kshubhita dharminyam. The agitation that we shall not remain peaceful, but we shall be agitated. Conditioned souls, they want to do something separate from Krishna. They're not satisfied to be with Krishna. So, the Supreme Lord, he is not agitated, but he responds to the desire of the conditioned soul by giving them facilities how to act in this material world. Now, what is this Mahatattvam? That's described differently in different places. Here, Prabhupada says that Mahatattva is called Pradhan as well as Brahman. But elsewhere, he states that Mahatattva and Pradhan, they're not the same. So, as I say, this means he specifically states that they're not to be equated. So this requires some, we shouldn't think that, well, Prabhupada's contradicting himself, but it requires more research. There are so many points of research in so many areas of Vedic knowledge. It may be that in one context, Mahatattva is equated with Brahman and Pradhan, and in another context, not so. That would require studying the commentaries of the previous acharyas and maybe some specialized books on this subject, which have been written, some other shastras like this. It's vast, the Vedic knowledge. One point is that this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam was traditionally presented to Hare Krishna, was presented to people with a background of education. We are all uneducated. Sometimes we, well, I'm very educated, I'm an MSc or a PhD, but according to Vedic understanding, that's not education at all. That doesn't really count as education. Education means to study Shastra, to be trained in Shastric principles and concepts. So to be trained, just like someone might be trained in how to, the Prabhupada sometimes gave the example that a man is trained how to, he can bark like a dog and imitate animal sounds. And he goes on stage and people pay money to see him standing there and make different noises. The dog, anyway, dogs are barking everywhere. But if a human being barks, then they think, oh, that's very good. Let's go and pay some money to go and watch him bark like a dog. And then make a sound like a ass. And then next thing he makes a sound like a cat. And they clap, very good. So that's also one kind of education. He's practicing, he's taught, maybe he has a guru who teaches him. No, you just have to move your voice. You have to move your throat a little bit like this. Okay, very, has training. So that's also one kind of education, but we wouldn't consider such a we wouldn't introduce that, oh, this is a very highly educated person, because it's education in something stupid. So in the same way, we may consider that, yes, we're very educated. I passed the general knowledge test, that who is the record batsman. They have all silly questions like this. They have questions from the what's on TV. They're telling the students that you have to, if you're telling them not to watch TV because it'll spoil your Krishna consciousness. They say, well, if you don't watch the TV, we can't pass the general knowledge exam, because they ask us, it's considered an important part of modern life to know what the latest nonsense on TV is in detail. So you're supposed to watch it. But this is not education. Education means this, to understand who we are, what is material nature, how we are entangled, how to get free from that. So traditionally this Srimad Bhagavatam, this is spoken to educated persons. We're not educated, we're all lectured, sorry to say. Don't mind, of course. You may say for sure, I'm a Malecha, but you may think, well, we're all Indians. But according to Shastric understanding, actually the original meaning of the word Malecha is one who doesn't know Sanskrit. So in that sense, that's the, at least we're all Malechas. So this knowledge, this detailed education, this detailed knowledge of the universe is meant, the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for people who are trained in knowledge of darshan, shad darshan. All and in Srimad Bhagavatam it also addresses so many misconceptions. It refutes, that's the word I'm looking for, niras. It refutes the various misconceptions which were prevalent in what we might call, for want of a better term, Vedic society. We'll find in this prayers of the personified Vedas that almost every prayer is a refutation of a common misconception based on a misunderstanding of the Vedas. But we don't recognize that because we don't have the education. So these points, they may be... Oh, that point I wanted to make also, that I was talking about material nature is personified as Durga Devi. So we say in English, it says personified, but the Sanskrit word is Murtiman, or I suppose it for Durga Devi would be Murti Mati, female form, or Murti Mata. I don't know. I don't know Sanskrit. I'm a Malecha. So this is very difficult for us to conceive of. When we say one of the wives of Krishna is Yamuna, and we say, well, but Yamuna's a river. Well, that's true, but she's also the wife of Krishna. She's a river and she's also a person. And everything's like that. Even all the elements, they are persons. We say the word for air is Vayu, and there's also the demigod Vayu. There's Chandra, Chandra is the moon, he's also a person. Surya is a person. It's not just a globe. Everything, all the in music, all the rags and raginis, they're all persons. So it's very difficult for us to conceive of this due to our empiric education. So we can't understand. We presume reality. We tend to measure reality in terms of how we're educated. That's why this Bhagavad education is so important. And it's also important to understand that Joro Vidya Joto Mayar Bhaibhav Tomar Bhajane Bhadha Moha Janamya Anitya Shangshare Jivke Kare Gadha. It's important to understand that materialistic education is simply increasing Maya. It is a manifestation of illusion. It doesn't teach us about what is reality. It is an obstacle in understanding Krishna, and it increases our illusion. Education is supposed to free us from illusion, but education that's not according to the Bhagavad Parampara, it increases our illusion. Therefore, it's not education. It's not actually education, it's contamination. We're going to school to get contaminated, not educated. It fills up our head with all wrong ideas. So this Bhagavat, those who are trained in Bhagavat, Darshan, then we can see through the eyes of the Bhagavat, and it's not difficult for us to conceive of that the Yamuna is a river. She's also not separately existing, but simultaneously existing as a person who is the wife of Krishna. So, obviously, the whole understanding of reality from the Vedic perspective is quite different to that of the modern empiric. Empiric means pratyakshavad, a pratyakshavadi. It's quite different. So there's some attempt to try to explain the Bhagavad Darshan in terms of modern science, but actually it's not possible, not fully possible, because modern science begins, it has a basic epistemological mistake that we can understand everything through our sense perception and then our speculation or extrapolation based on sense perception. It's a basic epistemological, and it's actually very foolish to think that we can understand everything based on our, we're tiny, tiny little beings with extremely limited intelligence and imperfect senses. And we're on a tiny, tiny, we don't know where we are, somewhere in some universe. And we just live for a flash of time and we're trying to understand everything. And we don't accept as knowledge anything except that we can understand. Extremely arrogant. The modern system, or the not modern, the empiric process begins with arrogance, that we shall understand everything and then we shall control everything by our knowledge, whereas the Vedic system starts off with humility, that we accept it as the avaroha panta and avarohana panta, that we, instead of trying to climb up or trying to conquer knowledge, we shall simply accept that we are very lowly. And those who are great, those who are high, those who have knowledge, they can pass it down to us. Therefore, vidyada dati vinayam, knowledge gives humility. But actually, even to get knowledge in the first place, one has to start off with humility. And that has to be real humility. Otherwise, we may put on a show of humility, but if our aim is to eventually, by getting the knowledge, we'll use it to exploit others, That's called Guru Mara Avidya. We get knowledge from the Guru, then we kill him with that knowledge. Arjuna was protesting. Guru Nahatvahi Mahanubhava. I got this knowledge from our gurus how to kill. Now I'm going to kill my guru with that knowledge. That doesn't seem very correct. That's a dharmic principle. That was an unusual case for Arjuna. But the general principle is that who is giving us knowledge, he is eternally worshipable for having given this knowledge. We cannot ever repay the debt of those who give us spiritual knowledge. To always be grateful. The modern system of education is you pay some money, you get the knowledge, and then you never see the teacher again, you don't care, nothing. It's an exchange of money. It's an economic exchange. And the education is just how you can prepare yourself to make money. But the whole concept of education in the Vedic system is completely different. The teacher is never paid. He doesn't even want to be paid. He won't. He'll deliberately accept poverty so that his knowledge will not become polluted. Because if he accepts money, then he has to teach according to someone else's manifesto. What's the someone else's policy? What's the word I'm looking for? I can't remember. Agenda. That's the word, yeah. He has to teach. That's the whole of modern education. History, science, everything, especially history, is taught according to the agenda of whichever country you happen to be in. That's why if you read the history, if you study in Pakistan the history of the subcontinent, you'll find it's quite different to that which is taught in India. Actually, not as different as it should be, because the Indians, I don't know why they bothered separating India and Pakistan. They should have just given it all back to the Muslims in the first place, because they don't state in the Indian history how the Muslims, the Aurangzeb and their atrocities and all this kind of thing. But I just remember reading when I was in Bangladesh, there was a history, we bought a history book, history of India, Pakistan and Bangladesh. Although at that time, Bangladesh as a country, it was less than 10 years old, so I don't know what history you're going to have. So it was telling how Akbar was really bad and Aurangzeb was really good, but from a Hindu perspective, it's quite different. Or from even an impartial aspect, it's quite different. So history is taught according to the agenda of those who pay the money, who want to control. Education is used as a means of manipulation, that you make people think and act the way you want them to do. And if anyone acts or thinks differently, they're considered strange. So Bhagavatam is a different kind of education. Teaching Srimad Bhagavatam, distributing Srimad Bhagavatam is actually a revolution against the misdirected education of the modern world. So I have a lot to say about this. I won't get into this now, but I'm personally not at all happy with our modern ISKCON's modus vivendi. You don't know what that means. It means getting along okay with, or living, adjusting to. That's the word. Adjust is an important word in India. It's in every Indian language, right? Adjust karna. So, modern ISKCON is adjusting with modern education, which personally I'm not happy with, because it's demoniac. It's jnanam avritya dehinam. It covers the actual knowledge, because it's based on lust, how to enjoy this material world. It covers the actual knowledge, which is supposed to be given by Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranako Dhanoditaha. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives the actual light of transcendental knowledge. Anyway, Hare Krishna. It's going on here too. We have a school here too. Government syllabus means How to make everyone a demon. That's all. Yeah. Question. In Vrindavan also they have a school, right? Means the children, after generations and generations of being gwalas, now they're going to become computer engineers and this and that. We're spoiling the culture in the name of helping the people. And people think, oh, this is wonderful, we're making the Vraj back. They'll all leave Vrindavan and go to Delhi. That's it. Or they'll set up a computer institute in Govardhan or something like this. It's all the modernization of India, which Prabhupada was against. Even Mahatma Gandhi was against it.
I have just commented as well as an inquiry. Sometimes when we are on the seat of the speaker,
yeah,
we tend to fall back on what we are studying in Bhagavad. And we try to give the knowledge. But we see the track record that when we are imparting this knowledge, somewhere we are making some mistakes. As you mentioned, some references to the school in the house. And most of the time, we say that upon the ajra is high, we must be teaching with our own examples. And we feel that they have not created such examples in those schools which have to
That's
be
true. Used. That's another disorder.
On the other side, I get confused when we see that we are in the material world and if we don't know how to live in the material world and we're talking about higher cases of life.
Talking about what, sorry?
Higher cases of life.
Higher education.
Higher education or higher spiritual education or Bhagavad education. We don't even know how to even behave with each other.
Yeah.
So to such people, when we talk of, you know, like Bhagavad Dharma, how is it going to go into their head? Because they don't have the basic etiquette. So the basic etiquettes have to be even learned in this material womb or material world. Therefore, they will learn in due course of time. Because as we know that spiritual life is not a one-day job or a one-life job. It takes bhavanam janma. It takes many, many births to come to that understanding that, you know, I have to be deserved of Krishna. So all of us are in this material world and yet we are trying to be out of that material world. And in the same time, we are trying to teach the subject matter to the others when we have not created a parallel, wonderful examples which can really be enlightening for those materialistic people who are suffering in the mental world.
That's true. Our gurukuls were a mess. But that doesn't mean we should give up the ideal. There's a saying in English, if you can't beat them, join them. But Prabhupada is very clear what he wanted his gurukuls to be. So if we were not successful in setting them up, it doesn't mean that we should throw out the ideal and set up schools which teach the government syllabus, which is demoniac, actually. It's teaching the opposite of what the Bhagavatam teaches. The government syllabus teaches Darwin's theory, and in their social studies they have all kinds of strange things about diet and all this kind of thing.
In due course of the time, Darwin's theory is getting refuted. Even the scientists themselves
Yes, there's a lot of opposition to that, but at the same time, the question is it our business to teach that which is Brahma Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Patav, that which is by definition faulty due to being produced by people with imperfect senses, illusioned, prone to make mistakes and cheating propensity? I say no because Prabhupada, he was actually revolutionary. Now, we have failed in many ways, that's true, but that doesn't mean that we should give up the ideal. Personally, and as I said, maybe I shouldn't have brought that up at the end of class, you're also making that point that the speaker shouldn't put his opinions from the seat. But if you do, then you should be able to back it up. And I'm saying that Prabhupada said this. Of course, others may argue that he didn't say that, or he said something else also. But Prabhupada saw the whole nature of this demoniac society, and he wanted that we have our own rural communities in which we could live and have our own, develop our own culture, in which we don't have to succumb to the influence of modern society. So that's a major part of Prabhupada's movement, which we haven't done yet. So unless and until we do that, the tendency is that we're going to become more and more adjusted to modern society, live according to its laws instead of living according to the laws of Shastra. We'll, as you say, we're living in this world and it seems like a reality. And for someone who's not well connected to the higher reality, then for him the reality is that I have to work and get a job and make money, and I need to get a certificate from the school to do that. But then again, Prabhupada's, his mission was first of all to create brahmanas, the few ideal people who could give an example to others. That was the aim of Prabhupada's school. And it, the general consensus is that was the first attempt was largely a failure. Not due to Prabhupada's ideas, but due to the misunderstandings with which we tried to implement them. But we can try again. We shouldn't give up the idea. That's my point. Yes, please. Please give the mic there.
Which year was it that Prabhupada said that there was 500 devotees? Now we have enough men.
Now we should boil the milk. That was about, I'm not sure exactly, about 1971 or 1972. But then he also went on expanding the movement.
Because the whole belief also emphasizes quality of life, not a quantity of the position.
Yeah, it's Brahminical culture. It means that the standard is set by the Brahmins. So the number of Brahmins in Vedic society is very few compared to non-Brahmins. But they set the standard, and all the usages, all the customs that others follow are based on the Brahminical usages, what the Brahmins do. And again, sitting here in India, we may to some extent have a better idea of what a Brahmin is than people in other part of the world. But we may also have some misunderstanding, because the what is called a Brahmin in modern India, it means, even if we see the traditional Brahmins, it means those who they've received many, there are many good things, the few traditional Brahmins who are left, but then there are misconceptions also mixed up with that. It's very important to understand the Bhagavad philosophy as it is very clearly, because otherwise there are many things in what we can call modern Hinduism which are parallel with Krishna consciousness in many ways, like I was giving the answer of the example of the Mayavadis. But we have to be expert enough to see what is favorable for Krishna consciousness and what isn't. Just like I was saying, in many things, often you'll find, just like you're saying, we're not well behaved and this and that, often you'll find Mayavadis in many ways, they're much better behaved than our devotees. You go to their ashram and they'll treat you very nicely and this and that. But at the same time, we have to understand that philosophically, we can't accept their philosophy. So, pure understanding the pure philosophy is important.
I want to also give someone a support to your personal observation from the Oxford Senior Dictionary. I just happened to study one time, and for instance, science is translated as, or explained as, theory, application, and observation. And then the next word, and if you go down to the next word in the dictionary, this would be Advanced Oxford's dictionary, that science fiction is termed as which is interesting because we're reading the Bhagavad Gita description of life on other planets, time relative, and other realms, and what have you. So that's the exact definition of science fiction according to the Oxford Senior Dictionary. The descriptions of life on other planets and other realms. And
as if it's impossible.
That is actually there. So these dictionary compilers, they are definitely hardcore atheists. Even God is spelled with a small g.
But they say with a capital G also. They give a different usage. With a different usage, yeah. No, but their duty as lexicographers is to give the meaning of the words according to the common understanding. And the common understanding is demoniac. So in a sense you could say they're neutral because they're neutrally presenting the demoniac viewpoint.
The word secular, yeah. Is described as to be concerned with worldly affairs rather than spiritual ones.
Yeah, that's one definition.
We have a complete bias because we want to have worldly affairs in the forefront rather than.
Well, that is a definition which has come about due to people being more concerned with worldly affairs than spiritual affairs. The meaning, the original meaning of the word has come to mean that.
That expresses a complete bias, a complete willfully not wanting spiritual.
Yeah, it's reflecting.
Rather than
it's reflecting modern society. We've got a lot of work to do. And I suppose that's why they have the marker saying finish at 8:45. We have a lot of work to do. So let's all go and do our service. Vancha kalpa trubhyas chakri paashindu vyavacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.